WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome into the student section, college football. I am your host, Graham Bacco, with my co-hosts, Josh and Devin. Boys, how are we doing on this fantastic Friday?
Feeling good, man. End of the week.
Dude, once again, thank God. It's our Friday, boys. We made it through another week, boys. We made it through another week, and it feels good to be alive. And, you know, it's a little more slower with college football weekend, but some really good matchups out this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this week went by super quick. I am doing great because for two reasons. Number one, the Tigers swept the Astros in the first round of the playoffs. They're going to the ALDS. But number two, Alabama took down Georgia 41-34 in an instant classic. Devin, you called it. Last week you said this is going to be an instant classic and a game to remember. This was, and you also said that you thought it was going to be the best game of the century. It's certainly up there. It is certainly up there. 41-34. It was 28-0. Georgia came all the way back, took a 34-33 lead. But Ryan Williams, if you roll back the tape, what did I say? I said in the last 2 to 3 minutes, Ryan Williams will make a play and score a touchdown to give Alabama the win. And that's what happened. Roll it back whenever the podcast gets posted. It'll get posted at some point. But roll it back whenever it gets posted. But anyways, yeah, that's exactly what we're starting with. It was it was the greatest college football game I've ever been to personally. I mean, what did you guys think?
Oh, man, it was a tearjerker. Win or loss, man. That was a work of art looking at that from the first play to the last play. Sure, in the middle it got a little boring. It's like, oh, man, Alabama blowout?
Yeah.
They came back. I was like, uh-oh. What is going on? They took the lead. I'm like, oh, no, this isn't really going to happen. Then old Ryan Williams gets the job done. Then the defense, last play of the game, snags it off Beck. Got a photo finish, last play.
Man, he almost called it as well. If whatever gets posted, he almost said, like, watch this game be like a blowout game. Now that when the first two quarters came around, we were like, oh, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Because everybody's preparing for this game. Trump comes to the game. Recruits come to the game. The game is sold out. All of the quad in the University of Alabama looks like the inside of the Apple Store during Black Friday. It's horrible if you're there to witness it. But at the same time, the first two quarters, I was not expecting any of that. They just came out. Offense looked like smooth than butter. The defense didn't allow a single thing to happen. I mean, a lot of score up, but that's okay. I mean, that was going to happen eventually. Yeah. But I mean, I was jaw dropped. I was like, well, this ain't even going to be a game anymore. Here comes the third quarter and the fourth quarter. One thing we know about Kirby is that he can make some really good second half adjustments. Yeah. He does a very good job of that.
Yeah.
And he did that. You know, when they got the chance to do something on offense, they did something on the offense. It was very sloppy play by a guy who was considered a first overall pick, and he did not play to any kind of expectation. I wish he could. And then when it came around to they made that big deep throw where they got the first lead of the game for the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the game of the year, and this may be one of the best games I've ever witnessed. And then you called it. Where Ryan Williams, it was like, okay, you want to do one deep throw? We can do a deep throw. Look at our 17-year-old. Oh, he's 17? Yeah, he's 17-year-old wide receiver from Saraland, Alabama, who goes in and gets the biggest score of his entire lifetime. Oh, he's not even 18 yet. He came in and buy a pack of cigarettes. Yeah, that's who he is. Right. And Bama, I really thought, I mean, like, when Joy was driving down the field, I was like, oh, buddy.
Yeah.
If this happens, what I think is going to happen. Bad throw again by Carson Beck. Bama wins the game that some people consider to be one of the greatest games they've ever witnessed. And personally, you just said, I wish I got a chance to see it in person, but I didn't. Man. But I was in a daggum A club, but it's all good. That still was an amazing, amazing game to witness, either in person or through his screen.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was the biggest emotional roller coaster, and also the fastest emotional roller coaster I have ever been on. When it was 28-0, I'm like, is this actually happening? Is this real life right now? Like, it's 28-0. This is not supposed to be happening. Kirby Smart is a better coach than this. Like, he never lets this happen to his teams. And then after halftime, like, I don't know. I just got this feeling. I'm like, something tells me Georgia's not finished yet. Kirby Smart's not going to let his team just roll over and die again in a stage like this. And Carson Beck and the Georgia offense, they came out swinging in the second half immediately, came all the way back. And I immediately was like, holy crap. You know, it brought me back to – I hate to mention this, but it brought me back to the Lions blowing it in the NFC Championship game. They had a three-score lead at halftime. They had a three-score lead at halftime, and then the 49ers came all the way back, and I'm like, I'm getting the same exact type of feeling in this game, and I'm not about to have a good night's sleep.
Graham can never have anything nice. That's what he was feeling about.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. But then Ryan Williams, literally 10 seconds later, puts up the play of the year and completely ruins the entire Georgia fan base. And then the two-point conversion to tack it on and make it a full score lead. And then Zabian Brown with the game-sealing interception. That was the wildest game I have ever witnessed. And going – and, like, with Alabama, like, the second half – like the offense from the first half to the second half, it was polar opposite. They're scoring just about every drive of the first half, and then right after halftime, they had nothing. I mean, they couldn't get anything going. It was punt and then another punt, and then they eventually got the field goal, and that was thanks to Ryan Williams with the tip drill catch, which was which has been overshadowed by his another amazing catch. I mean, Ryan Williams won them this game. He got them into scoring position for all their points for the second half. And so the MVP goes to Ryan Williams. And if I don't know if a freshman wide receiver has ever won a Heisman Trophy, but I mean, if he had a Heisman moment, consider that a Heisman moment.
I will say this, though. I disagree in some ways. I don't think he was the MVP of that game. I do think it was Milroe. What Milroe put up in that game and what he showed to thousands and thousands of people, not only of how he was able to throw the football, but how he ran with the ball, was some of the most impressive dual threat ability I've ever seen since Jaden Daniels destroyed Florida last year. I have never seen a dual threat quarterback who used his legs, who used his arm, to make the plays that he did in one game in one night. He was a baller. Mm-hmm. He just grew up his draft stock to the point where people consider him to be the first overall pick.
Yeah.
That's impressive. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, for
That's
sure.
very impressive. He did that efficiently against a very good SEC defense.
Yeah, man. Jalen Milroe, I loved watching him. Too smooth, too calm. Like, he was made for moments like this. This is why he's here for another year. I mean, words can explain how happy I was seeing him calm in the pocket, not freaking out, just taking control, and not, you know, because Beck, for the whole first half, I'm like, oh, is he sober?
Yep.
Because he was nervous. You could just tell. Like, when they zoomed in on his face.
He looked like trash.
Yeah, he was like, ooh, eyes bugged out. I mean, he looks like that anyway, but.
That's also very true. Yeah, I agree with it.
Man. Milroe, he got the job done. Williams did great, but you got to give props to Milroe. He's a one-man machine, can run past and do it all.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree. Milroe played absolutely outstanding, and he certainly proved that he should go before Carson Beck in the draft, hands down. I mean, his running ability is unlike any other in the country, and he also, contributed to the win with his legs and his arm. But, like, just the second-half play calling, it was just really concerning to me. Because it just felt like to me they're playing not to lose, like, because they're up by so many points.
They'd be conservative, yeah.
Yeah, they're being, but to me they are being way too conservative. Like,
I feel you.
What also got me a little frustrated in the second half is when they had running clock, when they were playing, like, starting plays with the running clock, you know, from getting tackled from a previous run play, they would always snap the ball with still 20 to 25 seconds on the clock. So, like, they still had another 15 to 20 seconds to waste and to deprive Georgia. Like, if they wasted that, like, I mean, it was countless times too that it happened. I mean, that the time adds up. I mean, that's at least another like 3-4 minutes off the clock where Georgia may not even have a chance to take the lead, and like the game ends like 33-28. Mm-hmm. So that's what really got me frustrated in the second half and why I did not like the play calling after halftime.
Now, you didn't get the chance to see, I think, well, did you watch the game at, in person, or did you watch?
I watched it on home TV.
Yeah, so you may have saw it too. They were doing a halftime interview with Kirby, mm-hmm. asking him, you know, what is leading to the reason why they've been playing like dog doo-doo on the first half, and then what happened in the next half. He said he thought they were doing fine on offense, but they couldn't make a single stop on defense.
Yeah.
And they knew they had to make a stop to help their offense out. Mm-hmm. And that's what you started seeing a lot more of. They started to change the tone and setting of the game. They started to change the way that Alabama was going into the second half, saying, oh, this is going to be a cake. Why don't I put 30 more on them real quickly? Why not? They changed that. They changed this. They changed the tone of that, and they made it to where, hold on, this game is not over yet. Carson Beck started to make the correct throws. He started mm-hmm. to make right throws.
Yep.
He started to read the field. They started to use the run game a lot more, which they should have done with to begin with. And that's what you started to see a lot more of. And that's why Georgia came back into this game to the point where they led for about 12 seconds, but that's okay. But, I mean, they led the game.
Right.
If you're Alabama fans, which you saw a lot of, they were shell-shocked, and they were bamboozled to the point where they're like, what just happened? How do you how did we go from having a 30-point lead, I think about 30-23, I mean, think of the score, but you go from that big of a lead to choking that lead to that amount of time, to the point where you looked at the Atlanta Falcons from the Super Bowl, and you're about to get roasted, and you know you're about to get roasted, because you probably talked a lot of trash on Twitter, and now you got to go and get all defensive about this, say, oh, we should have never hired Kalen DeBoer about this one, man. That's what it looks like to me. It's you know, the halftime adjustments that Georgia made is an impressive thing to watch, because if they came back, they played better defense, they were doing a lot better on offense, they were driving down the field. You know, they couldn't get the job done, but still, I thought they did a really good job in the second half for the most part.
Yeah, first half, second half, it was a tale of two teams.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I don't know what I was watching in the first half, but second half, that was Georgia right there.
Yeah, yeah,
that was definitely a Georgia team that's a threat. And Alabama, sure, they let go of that lead and got it right back, but you can't be doing that come playoff time, because once they get that chance, other teams get the chance, and they'll take it, grab it, and run with it. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, it. It was just crazy what happened. Kirby definitely – he obviously said something at halftime to his team. And it always seemed like this. We saw it against Clemson where it's like only 6-0, and we're like, what's going on with Georgia's offense? And then all of a sudden they go put up 30 in the second half on Clemson out of nowhere. And then they did it to Alabama back on Saturday. And that, as you said, that's Georgia. Like, that is how Kirby Smart and this Georgia team rolls. And, you know, for Alabama, like – that it's concerning in the way it's like, I don't know what happened to the secondary in the second half. Like they went from playing so well to allowing the Georgia receivers to get wide open in the middle of the field and getting burnt every single play.
It's that soft coverage.
Yeah,
I watched a lot of that, and I've seen, after watching a lot of the SEC games from last year, there's a big example of that. And LSU's defense had the worst defense I've ever witnessed being alive. When they have a Heisman-winning quarterback in the offense like that, their defense couldn't even stop a JV team that lives in Minnesota. You have a problem. Because when you play soft coverage like that, and they're going to find a way to attack that soft coverage, they're going to find holes. When you are playing off about 10 to 15 yards off your receiver, he's going to find a way to get in the middle of the field and get open right there.
Right.
But I will say, though, one of the most impressive things I saw from this past Saturday was the freshmen. The freshmen were absolutely amazing. Now, think about this, guys. Yeah, they made some ups and downs. You know what I'm saying? Ryan Ruins looked perfect, but that's okay. But, I mean, from a defensive point, you know, these guys were playing high school football
last year. Yeah.
Yep.
And they are on the stage in front of hundreds and thousands of people competing against people that are going to be getting drafted and make millions and millions of dollars for a league that's one of the biggest leagues in the world. You compete in that front. They competed pretty well. Now, I didn't say this that they were playing perfect. They had a lot of ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially Xavier Brown. He had a lot of plays where you wish you could have gone back and say, hey, what would you do in this right here? But these guys are only freshmen, and these guys have so much potential to beat some studs in this program. I'm excited to see it, but at the same time, you know, you look at stuff like that, you have a lot of potential for the future. Alabama's going to be set for a while.
Oh, yeah. They're Alabama isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
Oh, man. They're going to be good. They're going to be good. And the freshmen are proving it every single time.
Yeah, those were two basically future NFL teams, like NFL roster type players on the field at once. And it was essentially like, or maybe it was even better than the 2019 game against LSU, where it was quite literally, you know, you go back, look at the players that are on the field compared to now. It was literally two NFL teams on a field competing against each other on a college football field.
Give it about 1 or 2 years, we'll compare that game to the one in 2019, and we'll see how many of these players are on NFL rosters. And if it is, you know, 80% on both teams having NFL players, this game is very on match with that game in 2019.
Oh, yeah, probably even more than that. I mean, just thinking of...
Ooh.
Well,
don't stretch it yet, Ben. Don't stretch it yet. You're talking about... Oh, my...
We'll see.
That's close.
I mean, because...
That's stretching it a little bit, in my opinion.
We'll see, because... just because of the postseason implication that it has. I mean, well, as the season progresses, we'll see how the SEC shakes out. But just I was like looking at it today, it is theoretically possible that there could be a 6-way tie in the SEC between. So you would have Alabama, you would have Georgia, you would have Texas, you would have Tennessee, you would have Missouri, and you would have LSU. Wow. Just looking at their schedule, it is. I'm not saying it's going to happen. Like this, it's a low chance it's going to happen. But it is also just looking at the schedule, looking at who's favored, everything, like. It's certainly a possibility. You could have a 6-way tie at 11-1, and this past game is gonna have it.
Well, because LSU and Alabama play each other, though.
Right, but like LSU's loss, one loss would come to Alabama. Like if they beat Ole Miss next week, and they only lose to Alabama.
But they lost to USC already.
But that's not a conference loss.
Oh, you're talking about conference.
We're talking
play.
About
my apologies.
Play.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, one loss in conference play, but. We'll continue this conversation on the other side of this break. There's a lot. There's still some more to break down because this was a really great game.
Mm.
Welcome back to the student section, college football. Continuing a little bit the last part of the conversation about Alabama, Georgia. And I just wanted to talk about, like, Kalen DeBoer. I mean, this was his first SEC conference game, coming from Washington and Fresno State and everywhere else. And Sioux Falls, I believe that was the first one that he was at before Fresno State. But, like, now he is at Alabama. There's a bunch of, you know, speculation in the offseason is, can he actually compete with the big dogs of the SEC like Kirby Smart and his Georgia team? And he proved it. And, you know, especially even when Georgia came back and took the lead, there is no sweat. There's no panic. They're like, all right, we got 2 minutes. We're just going to hit you right back. And that's exactly what they did. I mean, what do you think this game says about Kalen DeBoer, like as a coach now at Alabama?
He is 3-0 against now Kirby Smart.
I think it's actually 6-0. I know what you're talking about. It was like Kirby Smart, Dan Lanning, and
Sarkisian.
Sarkisian. Yeah.
Having that kind of a record, you know, he cannot go unscathed about. That's an impressive, beyond comprehension of how impressive that record is. You know, and that's seeing a record like that, you know, there's a reason why, you know, he has every bit of a resume to make it to Bama, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's definitely that guy. I mean, coming from Washington to Pac-12, well, now they're in Big Ten, to the SEC, he's proven that it can be done. I mean, you saw Mike Leach, respects to him.
Right.
He tried to bring the air raid to Mississippi State. It was somewhat successful.
Mm, a little bit.
But what DeBoer was able to do at Alabama, he felt like he's really tapped into what Alabama's all about, the players he had. Because I've realized Milroe, he's running a lot more, and he's comfortable with it. Yeah. It's not – this doesn't feel forced. It feels like Milroe is able to run his sweeps. And as you see, he ran it in one day. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's just amazing to see what DeBoer has done at Alabama. He's tapping in more with a player style rather than a system. He's building around the players and not just the coaching staff.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I think when he first came here, he was, you know, he had asked the players, like, you know, what they did and didn't like, you know, they're, you know, under Saban, and he just kind of has tailored to the player, to the players, and it's been clearly successful. Like, he's letting the players, you know, kind of run the show, and he's letting the players just kind of be themselves and just kind of play into their strengths on the field and off the field, really. And especially Milroe, like, you can see that him and Milroe are on the same page from a coaching standpoint and playing standpoint. I mean, they just look very comfortable together. And Kalen DeBoer, he did it with Michael Penix last year at Washington, and he's doing it with Milroe now. I mean, just letting Milroe just be himself, play to his strengths. And, you know, like you said, you know, to your point about the 6-0 record against guys like, you know, Kirby Smart, Dan Lanning, and Sarkisian, like, three coaches that are going to take their team to the playoff this year. I mean, that is something to be said. Like, that, you can't just sweep that under the rug. Like, that is something major, and that should tell you that Kalen DeBoer is a winner. I mean, there's a stat. It's like in the last, like, 33 conference games or whatever that Kalen DeBoer has been a part of, he is 30-3 in the last 33 conference games. Mm-hmm. Or it was some sort of stat like that.
Yeah, I've already seen that,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kalen DeBoer is a winner. And when when they first hired Kalen DeBoer, it was him or Dan Lanning was my favorite options. And it was DeBoer really that held the edge, because he took Washington from, like, pretty much nowhere to the runners-up of the national championship. I mean, what he's able to do and how quickly he is able to do it, and now he's got Alabama with the roster and players, a lot of them still from when Saban was the coach. So, like, he's got so much talent and stuff that, like, if he can do what he did with Washington and with Fresno State, like, imagine what he could do at Alabama as the years progress.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. I mean, that's the impressive part. But the one thing I'll tell you is that, you know, when looking at him, some people are a little bit skeptical, because it's about joining the SEC. The right. Pac-12 is a different game, but the SEC is the best conference in the country.
No, without a doubt.
It is. Oh, and so, no, you have to, so you have to think about different aspects of competition, the different aspects of recruiting, and the coaching, because now you have to deal with a fan base who has been, you know, buttered up and tampered with Nick Saban for so many years, who has won so many championships. Mm-hmm. You have to go in and fill the shoes of the greatest of all time and recruit only, hopefully, on the same way as he has. And if y'all haven't seen his recruiting, he has done an amazing job when it comes to recruiting. He's got multiple 5-stars so far. He's got a 5-star quarterback. And that's impressive. You know what I'm saying? So far, he has shown and he has proven to be, you know, everything and a little bit more of a head coach for Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we'll see how that continues. But let's go to the upset of the weekend. Kentucky went into Oxford and took down Ole Miss 20-17. This was a game Ole Miss should have won. And it's like, everyone was kind of questioning, you know, Ole Miss. They're like, okay, they played absolutely nobody their first four games. Like, how good really are they? You know, because they were dropping 76, but it was on teams like Furman. And so everyone's like, okay, is this team, like, actually for real? Can they actually compete? And then they go lose to Kentucky. And that has to be, like, the most deflating loss for Ole Miss, and especially in a year where they've invested so much, and it's like this is, like, kind of finally their chance to try and go to the SEC championship and try and make a run in the playoffs, and then they lose.
I'm not going to talk a lot of crap about Ole Miss because my mama's listening right now. She's an Ole Miss fan, so I love you, Mama. I will say this, though. You know, this was the first real main test for Ole Miss to really start to actually get their feet wet on the upcoming competition. Next weekend they do play against LSU. This weekend they play against South Carolina, which has a much better defense. Mm-hmm. But talking about this game, you know, this was the first real main game, first real SEC competition. I could not believe what I was watching. I really couldn't. Because the thing is, Kentucky has a few pieces in there that is really nice. They do. They played at home.
Yeah, in the ball.
And Ole Miss played in their stadium during a somewhat of a day game. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me this is how you introduce yourselves, I guess, SEC competition for the year. I was shocked. I was shocked because I thought, and I will continue to say this, this is the most talented Ole Miss team I have seen since probably 2013.
Yeah.
Which all of that team, if you've seen that team, it's amazing. But this is such a talented team that they, this is the best team I've seen them probably make the playoffs with.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how they lose a game like this to Kentucky, but this weekend they have to set the stage and say, okay, that game was a fluke. Let's move on and let's win now. That's what they have to think.
Yeah, right now I feel for my friends in Oxford right now because I don't know what was that about. Because I'm watching the game in the quad. They're getting ready for the kick. I'm just like, oh no, he's about to shake it, isn't he?
He shanked the crap out of that kick.
Yeah.
Like, well, I can't say I didn't see that coming. I thought he could have been a great sleeper pick for Heisman. He did play fine.
Oh, God.
But that's not going to look good on his Heisman resume.
No.
Ole Miss really disappointed.
It was awful. I mean, it was awful. I mean, a Kentucky offense that doesn't have a whole lot of identity all around it, mm-hmm. outside of Key and Barry and Brown, you're telling me that is the best thing they can do against Kentucky? You gotta be kidding me. I mean, this is a team that is prepared for a playoff run that doesn't have a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of weaknesses. They dropped a whole bag and a half on the whole transfer portal to get Walter Nolan Prince. I'm not even gonna try to say his last name. They got a former five-star linebacker, Samaritarian Perkins. Their offense looks absolutely amazing with Juice Wells, Trey Harris, that tight end who I'm still hyped about, Henry Parrish, Jackson Dart should be a stud.
Yeah.
And you lose to Kentucky at home at an 11 a.m. game? Bruh, what in the world is that? You try to make a word out there about you being a playoff team, and you can't even beat Kentucky?
Yeah.
What are you going to do against South Carolina? South Carolina's the best defensive front of the nation. Yeah. They have a true freshman.
They're a scrappy team.
One day, man.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? That's the best you can do?
And,
oh, Lord.
Well, and now, like, a side effect that, you know, the media is talking about is, what's Lane Kiffin going to do now?
Like, Florida.
All right, exactly. Like, is Lane Kiffin going to leave Ole Miss after this year?
Really?
That's a lot of people are starting. The rumors are starting to.
Oh,
it's not like any reports or anything. But that's the media conversation. Lane Kiffin leave Ole Miss? Like, this is the best they've ever been, and they lose to Kentucky. Is he gonna go to a more attractive spot like Florida? Maybe. Well, who knows?
Billy Napier is gonna get fired this season.
Oh yeah,
he's gonna get fired.
Oh yeah, no.
He is just fighting off for a paycheck at this point right now, man. That's what he's doing. Now, like you said, and I agree, Florida is a very more attractive spot kind of recruiting to, you know, which is the legacy and its history.
Yep.
It's a very well-known school.
Yep.
And if Lane Kiffin does decide to leave, I actually hope he doesn't, just for my mom's sake, you know, it's I don't blame him for going to Florida. And the thing is, he has to show, he has to prove why he's a top-notch quarterback. He has a good offensive mind. He can develop he can develop quarterbacks pretty well, but he has to show why he's a good coach for the SEC level. He can't just say that, oh, I'm just Nick Saban's little man. No, I can't say that. He has to make a name for himself. If he can't even show that at Ole Miss, then what the heck is he going to do at Florida?
Yeah.
Is Ole Miss playing Georgia this year?
Yeah, dude.
Ole Miss does play Georgia.
They play at Ole Miss.
Played at Ole Miss.
And Smart. I love to see that showdown, man.
They're also going to LSU, I think, next week.
Next Friday.
They're going to LSU.
Saturday,
yeah. You know, it's not going to get any easier for Ole Miss. They got to turn it around. They got to figure it out. But another team that really needs to figure out is Auburn.
Oh.
Oklahoma came back down 21-10 in the fourth quarter to take down Auburn off of Peyton Thorne pick six that changed the entire game. And Auburn, they're They haven't had a road game yet, by the way. I don't know who's keeping track. They've had five games. They've all been at home, and they're 2-3.
There's not a single sober human being in Auburn right now.
Yeah. I mean, Auburn, sorry for you Auburn fans out there, if you listen to the Tuscaloosa Sports Radio. But I hate to tell you, but it's pretty rough. Fell 27-21, Oklahoma 17 unanswered in the fourth quarter to come back.
Payne Thorne throwing an interception is like a moth to a flame. It there is no main difference. I mean, I really thought he probably listened to the radio show because he was actually balling out.
Yeah,
I was like,
he started off well.
Oh my gosh, he must have really gotten nervous what I said to him last week. And he's been balling out. He's been utilizing his weapons. He's been turning up, and I couldn't believe it against a really good Oklahoma defense. Yeah. And then there comes the pick six, and now I'm like, oh. Grass is green on this side still, my boy. It doesn't make much of a difference. Still, Auburn fans, they can't catch a breather. They haven't caught a breather since 2014. Grass is green.
Yeah, man. Auburn, the first half they played like a football team. Like, okay, they can do this against Oklahoma. This is a good win. You know, good step in the right direction. And then they just collapse. Like, it's just in Auburn fashion.
It's not even much of a collapse. They collapsed at home in Auburn with all those Auburn fans there. And he even said, they've played, I mean, like five home games straight in a row.
All five games have been at home.
You can't win at home. What makes you think you're going to win away? Well,
what the heck makes you think you're going to win at Tuscaloosa the last game of the season? Oh, no, we got this. We got Payne Thorne, boys. Oh, great to hear that, pal. At least they got, what's his name, Deuce Knight from Notre Dame. They flipped him.
Oh,
did you see that?
Yeah,
That's a really big flip. He's probably that quarterback room is not so good. He probably start next year, honestly. But you telling me, how do you choke the lead? How? They're starting their true freshman quarterback, Michael Hawkins, the second or the third. They started him up, and you've already gotten the big old lead. You're already doing enough on defense. How are you choking away this game? Oh, that's right. You threw a pick six. My bad, player. Have a nice day.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's not getting any easier for Auburn because they go to Georgia this week, and they go to Missouri next week, and then they go to Kentucky the week after that. Then they got Vanderbilt and your old Monroe.
They're going to lose to Vanderbilt.
They easily could. We're going to talk about Vanderbilt later on shortly here. But then they also have A&M, and then they come here to Tuscaloosa. Like, Auburn's – like, they haven't even gotten to the hardest part of their schedule yet. Like,
Auburn athletic director, if you're hearing me, just save the money and cancel the season.
Like, I'm sorry,
save the money
and
fire Hugh Freeze right away. If you not see the allegations, man, just go ahead and do it, man.
Like, if you're an Auburn fan, I'm sorry, but I mean, you probably know this by now, but like, you know, it's not going to get any better this season.
Go get Ben Johnson from the Lions.
No. I would love to keep Ben Johnson in Detroit, please. Until we win a Super Bowl, keep Ben Johnson in Detroit. I just want to see one Lions Super Bowl.
That's true. Thinking about it, though, is that, you know, like I said, Auburn has a lot of really good talent on that team. They really, really do.
They really do.
I will never stop saying that because they genuinely do. They always have a really, really solid defense each and every single year. They always have really nice pieces on the offense, especially this year they do. Mm-hmm. They started to really throw it to Cam Coleman, who's a five-star.
Yeah, that dude can play.
And they just lose this game? How do you do that? I really don't understand. I mean, it's so tough for me to say it because I think it's his second year now.
Well, second year at Auburn. He played at Michigan State for 2 years.
No, I'm talking about Hugh Freeze.
I thought you were saying Payne Thorne.
You still got to point to the head coach on this because, you know, this game was in their hands.
I
thought they were competing very well.
I thought they were going to win the
game. It all points back to the man up front, and that's the head coach. You cannot always blame it on the quarterback or on the defensive line, offensive line, any of these other coordinators. You have to go back to the main guy. It has to be the head coach. He did not get the job done. He did not coach enough to get the job done. And that's sad because they really did well. I was somewhat happy for Auburn fans because I have a few of my friends who go to Auburn, and I was like, oh, they can actually stay sober today. That's great to see. And then they go and lose the game by a pick six, and you're like, how do you lose this game? How? And I mean, it's just, it's sad, but it's funny at the same time, though.
Yeah, it really is. And we'll talk more about the SEC and Alabama, their upcoming opponent playing Vanderbilt this week. We'll talk about that on the other side of this break. We are back for the final segment of the student section of college football, and we're going to preview and predict some games for this upcoming week. Alabama going on the road to Vanderbilt this week. Now, here's the thing about Vanderbilt. This is not your normal Vanderbilt that goes 1-11 because they have Diego Pavia. And if you don't remember, Diego Pavia went into Auburn with New Mexico State last year and destroyed Auburn.
His team?
Yeah, that was his
team.
Oh, my God. Diego Pavia was the quarterback when New Mexico State went to Auburn last year. They crushed Auburn.
Oh, my God.
And that is a reason why Alabama cannot take this game lightly. Although I did see a post, I think it was this past Monday, that they set up the rat traps.
Yeah, I've seen that.
They set up the rat traps in the facility, you know, saying, hey, watch out. Keep your focus. What do you guys think about this game?
Definitely feel this could be a trap game, but I feel like Alabama will do just fine.
I mean, this is one of the best Vanderbilt teams I've seen in a minute. I mean, like, dude, when they're they're competing against Missouri the way they did.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a really good team. Diego is an amazing quarterback. Mm-hmm. When you are competing that good with Vanderbilt. Dog, I'm gonna draft you first overall. But no, I mean, like, he has been competing so well with Vanderbilt, and the entirety of Vanderbilt's team has been playing lights out, really solid college football. They played better football than Auburn has. They played much better football, in my opinion, than Arkansas has.
Yeah,
I mean, they've been competing to a level where I would rate them a lot higher than a lot of the SEC schools. You know, at this moment, I really do like Vanderbilt. You know, they're not going to win this game. They're not going to win this game. With all love and respect to them, they're not. You know, and if they compete to the well point, then shout out to Clark Leah because that's an amazing job by his team. But, you know, this is a really good Vanderbilt team, but it's just, you know, this is a really good Alabama team. Unless Alabama has not, you know, just gotten over the win and just moved on and not played down to the competition, you know, I'm going to have Alabama win this game. But if they don't, oh, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is somewhat comparable to last year. Like, after Alabama, they beat LSU at home, huge win. And then the next week, they had to go on the road to Kentucky. Everyone was saying, oh, you know, Kentucky, you know, it's a trap game. Maybe Kentucky can get them. I think this has, like, pretty much the same exact feel, where it's like Alabama's come off a major, major resume building win. And now they have to go play a school that, you know, not many people are really talking about. But hold on here, because Vanderbilt, remember, they beat Virginia Tech in week
Virginia
one.
Tech week
yeah.
One,
who they got the, I think it was like the fifth most first place votes. Like they were supposed to compete in the ACC this season.
Yep.
And then the one confusing loss was to Georgia State. I have no idea how that happened.
Where'd that come from?
I don't know. Yeah. That was random. And then the next week they almost beat Missouri. They were a 30 yard field goal shy of beating the number 7 team in the nation. So that Alabama cannot play around, and I don't think they're gonna play around. I think they're gonna respect Vanderbilt. They're gonna respect, you know, what they've done. They're not gonna take them lightly. And I think, you know, Alabama, they're gonna hopefully should win this pretty comfortably. The spread's 22. I think that's a fair spread.
Low, my opinion.
Yeah,
but that's fair.
I could see Vanderbilt possibly, you know, getting like a garbage time touchdown or something to cover the spread. You know, one of those bad beat type things.
Yeah.
But I think Alabama should win this game pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I've got Alabama 41-22. I feel like Alabama might have a little shaky first quarter to get, you know, because they're playing in Nashville.
Yeah.
And they're playing, I don't think, like, building the stadium over there.
Yeah, they're still doing the renovations. Yeah.
So that might throw them off a little bit after, like, the first quarter and a half. They'll get the wheels rolling. Alabama will be Alabama.
Yeah. I mean, I think Vanderbilt's going to put up some scores in this game. They will. I think I still do love their offense a lot. You know, I think the Bama is just going to consistently be able to drive down the field each and every single drive. I'm going to say it's going to be probably about 55 to 20.
I'll say 45. I'll say 45-21. I think Alabama is gonna just barely cover the spread, but you know, I think Jalen Milroe and the gang are gonna pull away. You know, really start, you know, towards the end of half and then start of the second half. I think they're gonna pull away. But a far more intriguing game. It's an interesting slate. It's not as exciting as this past week or the next 2 weeks. Are gonna be great. Just wait for the next couple weeks for this show. Oh man, the previews are gonna be great. But as for this slate, South Carolina, Ole Miss, certainly an intriguing game. South Carolina, a very scrappy team. They beat Kentucky 31-6, and then they're a field goal shy of going to overtime with LSU. That was a crazy game.
Yeah.
South Carolina is not to be messed with, and Ole Miss is going right into Columbia. It could be a danger zone for Ole Miss right now.
Yeah, this is a head scratch because I'm confused on Ole Miss going one way, but South Carolina not on the rise. Mm-hmm. You cannot sleep on South Carolina. They're not even sneaky good. They're good.
Yeah.
They're getting the spotlight put on them. I feel like this game will definitely be like, okay, are they for real? But it's also going to be a game for Ole Miss to be like, all right, are they frauds?
Yeah.
But this is going to be quite a game to watch.
I mean, thinking about with South Carolina, one thing is, you know, will Lenora Sellers be healthy to play this game? If he's healthy, this is going to be a close game. It will be. I still do love South Carolina's defense. I really do like, you know, what their defensive front looks like. Their DBs are really nice, and how they get pressure on the quarterback. If they are healthy all around, and if Ole Miss, you know, if they can find the way to say, hey, this has to be our wake-up call, we need to make a statement win right here to at least get things going before LSU, this has to be it. I think it's just going to be more of a battle of Ole Miss's offense against South Carolina's defense.
Yeah.
It's going to be a heavy matchup.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, and to your point on Lenora Sellers, I got a source. I got a little connection over at South Carolina telling me that Lenora Sellers, he should be good to go.
Ooh.
And yeah, so but in terms of like, because I had asked him, you know, will he play against Alabama? And he's like, yeah, you know, as long as, you know, he doesn't re-injure himself against Ole Miss, he's gonna play against Alabama for sure. So he should be good to go against Ole Miss, which heightens the excitement of the game for sure. But
whoops, very nice.
Some headphones just fell. But anyway, as for predictions, what do you guys think is gonna happen? Who do you think is gonna win this game?
Oh, this is tough. I don't even want to say it out loud, man. This is – oh, man, I'm going to go.
Let me go first.
You go first.
So Ole Miss has to wake up for this game.
Mm-hmm.
They absolutely have to. They have to show why they are one of the best teams, not only in the SEC but in the country. They have all of this amazing talent, and they have to show and go out there and prove why they deserve to be a college football team in the playoffs. They have to. However, South Carolina is an uprising team. They have a lot of pieces that will get you wins, definitely, in this conference. But I'm going to trust my instincts, and I'm going to say that Ole Miss does win this game. And it's going to be relying heavily, heavily on Henry Parrish Jr., the running back for Ole Miss. I'm going to say the score is going to come down to 29-25, Ole Miss.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I think Ole Miss is going to win this game because they simply have no other choice but to win this game. I think Lane Kiffin's going to make sure that the team doesn't make the same mistake that they did last week and get, you know, maybe too confident or take the opponent too lately. I really think I think Ole Miss is going to bounce back this week. Give me Ole Miss 31-27.
Yeah, this might be Ole Miss's wake-up call right here, because they've got to win this game. If they don't win this game, you can kiss your playoff hopes goodbye. You can kiss the SEC goodbye, unless someone loses, which that's probably not going to happen. I'll take Ole Miss. It's going to be a close one. I don't feel like it's going to be that high scoring, but it'll be probably around, give me 17-23.
Ooh. Okay.
Ooh, I like that.
Ooh,
that.
Okay.
This is one game that would not surprise me if it goes to overtime.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree.
This might go, it'd be like the final, the final score of like the end of regulation being like 24-24, and this goes to overtime.
Oh,
it
certainly
would not surprise me at all.
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, but on the point about Ole Miss's playoff chances, if they lose this game, they're not quite over because they still have to go to LSU and they have to play Georgia, which technically if they won out, they would certainly have two huge wins, but it would, but it puts them in a win, like winner or go home type situation. Like you have to beat Georgia or else you have to beat LSU or else. But yeah, certainly the pressure will be on if South Carolina
are you a peach,
takes the win.
Are you a Peach Bowl contender or are you a Music City Bowl contender?
No, actually, that's
you're
what it boils down.
You're the Pop-Tart Bowl contender or are you a Natty contender? That's what we're going to find out.
That's what it really boils down to. But there's another intriguing matchup, a rematch of the national championship. Michigan going to Washington on the West Coast for an NBC nighttime game in Washington. Washington, they're favored, believe it or not.
Wow.
One-point favorite currently over Michigan. What do you guys see happening in this?
I really do like Washington's offense. I think Will Rogers has done a really good job with that team and going in with how the new head coach has done well there. I think it's Jed Fish.
For Arizona.
I really do like Washington. And Michigan's offense has not really got anything going since the running backs. You know, that's the only thing they have. Mm-hmm. The quarterback situation's not been good. I'm going to go for the upset. I'm going to say that Washington's going to win this game 35-22.
Wow. Yeah, this is, well, thanks to the new, you know, conference realignment, this wouldn't be your everyday matchup, Washington and Michigan. But a rematch of the Natty, you would think this would be a great game, but Michigan's like, this is not Michigan.
It's two totally different rosters from just a few months ago.
But Washington, they're a fine-looking team. I will say that. In Seattle, they're looking pretty good. Mm-hmm. Michigan, it's just, who's the starting quarterback? Like, who's?
I think it's still Alex Orji.
I think Orji,
I think he's still there, yeah. He's okay.
I honestly, as much as I would say, I would think, you know, you would, common sense would tell you, oh, Michigan's going to win this. But I don't know if I can trust Michigan.
Yeah.
The way they've been playing is so faulty. It's just, I don't have the confidence in Michigan. I mean, Washington's defense, it's a, well, Big Ten now, but like they're Pac-12 defense, so I feel like they should be able to score. I mean, you should be able to run through a former Pac-12 team. Mm-hmm. But Washington, they're going to get the job done, and I have Washington 32-20.
Wow. Yeah, I think Michigan, I said it a couple weeks ago after they beat USC, Michigan is far too reliant on the home run runs. Like, if you don't get those 40, 50-yard touchdowns, Michigan's got nothing. And I really like – I've always been a fan of Jed Fish. I like how he did with Arizona. And I like Washington. I think it's going to be very close. But I think Washington is going to win this game. I'll say 23-20. I'll say 23-20 Washington. I think they're going to take down number 10 Michigan. And for Michigan, I think they still got to play Oregon. They still got to play Ohio State. I think Michigan's playoff hopes also end. You can cut Michigan out of the playoff conversation after Saturday night. So, yeah. Guys, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your Friday night. Enjoy your college football Saturday. We'll enjoy it. We will see you guys next week. And next week is the day where everyone says don't have a wedding. October 12th.
Oh yeah.
October 12th, the day where you can't have a wedding. So, yeah, if you have a wedding, sorry, skip it for college football. But yeah, have a great night.